Hi, I'm James P. Friel.
And I'm Dean Holland. It's time to fasten your seatbelts, boys and girls.
That's right. If you're an entrepreneur who's wanting to take your business to the next level and have a bit of fun while getting cutting-edge advice on your business, marketing, and sales, welcome to Just the Tips, arguably the best podcast in the entire world. I guess that's good, right?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right. That was easy. Yeah. That was the easiest thing we did all day.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Just the Tips. This is your host, James P. Friel. I am thrilled that you guys are here with us today. We have, we've got an awesome show lined up for you, but only if you like making money. If you don't like making money, just tune out right now. This show's definitely not for you. I'm actually just kind of saying a little bit of BS while I'm waiting for him to come galloping into the studio. But here he is, riding in on his white noble steed, the bearded wonder from the United Kingdom, ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Mr. Dean Holland.
How are you doing, James? My favorite time of the week, other than the fact that you're here, but we can make do.
Right. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about today's show to talk about. We've got an awesome guest, and I'll introduce him in just a second. But one of the things that's near and dear to your heart, my heart, our businesses, is lead generation and high ticket sales. Something that we both do on a regular basis, and we've got somebody we're going to talk to who's helped a lot of people with that sort of thing. Are you as excited for this as I am?
I am, and I think this is actually a really great time for the topic as well, because I know, you know, we've done a few shows recently, haven't we, where we've spoke about things like acquiring more customers. But I think one of the things, the other ways of growing a business, of course, and usually one of the easiest ways, is to raise the value of what you're offering.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
so the idea that we're now going to delve into that, I think it's going to be super timely and super helpful for many people. And selfishly, like you say, a topic that we love. So even
right.
If no one else is listening, we're going to love it.
Well, speaking of listeners, I'm not sure if he's listening live, but he promised me he's going to listen later today. Good friend of mine. I'm going to give a shout out here to Ricky Joe. Dean, you and Ricky, like if I ever got the two of you in a room together, I don't even know what would happen. He's one of my good friends from back in Florida. And anyway, he said he's listening today. So what's up, Ricky?
What's up?
Yeah, you even got a shout out from the United Kingdom, Nottingham, of all places. So let me, without further ado, let me introduce our guest today, who is founder of a company called LeadRoll.co. He's helped people dramatically expand their sales and their monthly recurring revenue. And, a guy that's dialed in on bootstrapping and digital marketing, all things like that. Welcome to the show, Tyler Kemp. How are you today, man?
Oh, man, I'm feeling good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So you left your horse at home today?
Actually, I'm still on my horse right now.
Okay.
Oh, there we go. One of my own.
Must be a small horse. I didn't see it.
Well, he's more like a 120-pound dog. He's home. You know, Rhodesian Ridgeback is kind of my style.
Yeah, so. that's a big dog. Dean's got a big dog, not quite as athletic. His name's Pablo. Pablo's a massive English bulldog.
Oh, man. I have no idea if the dogs are different in England or not, but I wish I could see him in person, but I'm in Denver, but that's all right.
It's okay. You're not. Pablo's probably sleeping right now. That's one of his favorites.
Actually, I just had to remove him from the home office. He was upside down about 30 seconds ago on his back snoring.
Yeah. No shame if there's some barking in the background. #work from home life right now.
There we go.
Right. Yeah. So dude, so let's get into some cool stuff. Talk about your fascination with outbound marketing and lead gen, and like, why are you in that space? Like, what captivated your attention about it?
Oh man, such a good question. So I guess to launch right in, and
usually I don't have a good question until like three or four questions in. You can ask.
Yeah, to be fair,
this one will do.
Looking forward to this. Yeah.
Yes, this one will have to do for now, I think. But
nice.
To give some background for the listeners, so I've helped build several seven-figure businesses. I've been on the marketing advisory board of a $16 billion company at one point. Kind of got tired of the enterprise life, moved to startup space, helping some SaaS companies scale from like, you know, 60 grand a month to 200 grand a month in recurring revenue in one example in about 8 months. And that led into the birth of what is now Lead Role and kind of my journey as a provider of fractional sales services. So that's the quick background. And what's curious about the question is why am I interested in high ticket sales? And I think the answer to that is a little bit nuanced. We didn't start with high ticket sales. We actually started with low ticket sales, and we've gone back and forth in different ways. And so my fascination with high ticket is because I know what works for prospecting, and it just doesn't work when you're trying to manage a sales team. There's just different tactics required to build and scale a low ticket business than the tactics that are required to build a high ticket business. And right. I just far prefer the tactics of belly to belly sales. I'm kind of a marketing sales hybrid at heart. And those tactics work so well. And I also will say this, you can provide so much more value to people in a high ticket environment, and you don't have to cut corners. You don't have to, you know, it's not about the price always. It's more about doing the job right and doing the
well. It's also, and it's also about the experience,
right? Right?
You can create a great experience. I'm a big advocate of high ticket sales. Really what I've built my businesses on, but just because I know we probably have listeners who don't have a high ticket sales component to their business. And I think a lot of times people have a hard time seeing how they can create that. They're like, well, I just like my audience won't go for it, or I just don't like that. Or, you know, people like my thing just can't be a high ticket thing. And, you know, maybe in some cases that's true, but I feel like a lot of people cut themselves short by immediately discounting their ability to create something high ticket. Dean, wouldn't you say that's kind of true?
Yeah, I can say from my own personal experience, like I remember years and years, I think it was 2010. So at this stage, I've been in business full time for 2 years. And I think I didn't think I sold anything higher than maybe $70 or $100, let's just say.
Right.
And I remember somebody
and those
saying,
those were your really expensive lap dances for your preferred customers.
Yes, but I try not to bring that up on every show.
Right. Yeah.
And they were in euros. Does that even count?
Yes. Right. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so with the conversion rate, you're over $100.
So yeah, anyway, like so I was selling these low-priced digital products back then in my training company, and I remember somebody, a mentor of mine, suggesting that I should do something more valuable. And I remember saying, you got to go high ticket. And I remember how long it took me to dare start selling at $1,000. Like right. To me at that time, that was so expensive and high ticket. But I remember, you know, talking back to what you say, how hard that personal barrier was for me to see, like, because I used to put so much into all my products, no matter what price they are, you know, as we all do, I'm sure, put our all into them. And sometimes I think you feel like when you've given your all, like, how can I justify an even higher price? I don't know what you guys want to make of that.
Yeah, well, Tyler, I bring that up because I feel like that's probably representative of a pretty good percentage of entrepreneurs out there who have a hard time making that leap or understanding like that it is possible with the way that you package up your offer and all these other things. So I want you to kind of respond to that in just a second. But if you are listening live and you want to call in and get into this conversation and have us help you figure out what a high ticket offer for you could look like, give us a call at 888-627-6008. And if you do happen to be across the pond or anywhere else like Dean, it's just +1-323-744-4831. So Tyler, in terms of that objection, I can't create high ticket, what do you say to squash that?
Well, it's an objection that I myself have had at one point. So it's something that is near and dear to my heart, and I feel the pain because, you know, at one point there was this huge barrier for our business as well, and we were thinking, okay, well, if I do a volume play, low cost, then I'm going to hit more of the market. But what ended up happening, and this is kind of a roundabout way of answering this question, is that there's just only so much you can do to really provide a ton of value at those low rates, especially if you're like a SaaS business. Maybe you have an amazing product, but you're right about the value of that customer experience and the follow-up and the phone calls. And typically, there's no such thing as a low-maintenance client, or at least they're really rare in my experience. Like most clients, if you're being proactive about really helping them, you still have to do a ton. And if you're selling low ticket, you have to find a way to raise the value of what you're doing to get it there if you want. And here's the big reason why. If you want to bring on a sales team, and dare I even say a commission-only sales team, okay, which is how we operate our businesses. We provide huge incentives and tons of value, like 10x yield on what we charge. But if it's not high enough, you're not going to be able to get good sales talent. And you have to be able to incentivize these people to close deals and work their butts off every day and handle the grunt work. So if you've got this low ticket and you're worried about not being able to scale it, can I even do it? The answer is figure out a way to provide more value to your clients.
Well, okay, so hold on. So as a convert yourself, somebody who needed to make this mindset shift, I guess a couple things sort of come to mind. First, what was the story that helped you start to move in this direction and see that it might be possible to have a product or service that was higher ticket, that had better margins, where you could invest in a sales team, better experience, like the whole thing? Like, what was that story that really was a tipping point for you?
So kind of similar to Dean, actually. I am mentored by a gentleman named Nick Cosman, and you know, he's got some great stuff out there in terms of sales process and whatnot. And he and I were chatting one day, and he was just kicking my butt about our service. And I'm like laying out this scenario of the situation of our business and our pricing. And he's just like, dude, you just got to do it. Like you have to just do it. Add more value. If it's not worth that much, then figure out a way to make it worth more.
And what were you guys, what were you guys doing at the time? Like, what was the thing that you were selling to people?
Sure. So our original kind of go-to-market product was, with LeadRoll even, was a LinkedIn lead generation kind of a service where, you know, for anywhere from as low as $99 up to $500 a month, we were doing some LinkedIn outbound kind of automation stuff on the back end. Similar to companies like, you know, there's Cleverly out there, other people who do some of that stuff. However, what we found, and we were great at, you know, bringing in new clients and they were happy and we were really scaling up. But the problem is that there's only the market is completely shifting. And I don't think everyone is quite aware of this shift, but I've been, you know, having my finger on the pulse now every single day for several years in this specific space, and just realizing that an omni-channel approach is necessary to get yield, and that there's certain kinds of businesses that it just did not work for, and people, you know, would love to just pay $100 and get tons of deals in, and whether you're paying $100 or $10,000, if you're in like lead generating kind of space, people want appointments on their calendar. And fact is, we were basically saying, hey, here's what we'll do, and we'll kind of do this top of the funnel part, and you know, we'll get people in your network, and we'll message them, and we'll send them stuff, and you know, don't be a spammer, and here's what you have to do. Now, you know, we're going to provide you an email, and you've got to validate it, you've got to go through, and you've got to email them and call these people and go back and forth with them, and don't take no for an answer. You've got to do all this stuff to get an appointment on the calendar.
Yeah.
And no one did it.
Right. Right.
It's too complicated. Everyone was just like, okay, yeah, sure. And they want it, they believe that they can do it, but they underestimate the complexity of a really tight-knit outbound sales process.
Well, and just sort of, you know, abstracting that a little bit, I think that therein lies the recipe for creating something high ticket for your business, is that your customer has a whole variety of problems around one particular topic. And if your thing is low ticket, it, you know, it might be information, or it might be, you know, some low ticket service or something, but it's probably not fully addressing the entire problem in like in one thing. And if you can create a comprehensive solution that solves that problem, therein is the value that people are willing to pay way more money for, because they're like, oh, wait a second. I was willing to pay, you know, X amount of dollars to get this part of the problem solved, but now that you're solving the whole thing, like, I'll pay you a lot more money.
Right. Yep. And we were able to dial it down, you know, for us to say, okay, well, the people this is truly working for need to have a ticket size. Like, if you're doing outbound sales, and we're talking cold email, we're talking, you know, if you are making cold calls, or if you are doing any kind of outbound LinkedIn prospecting, we found the sweet spot is really 20K and above in deal size, like lifetime value of a client. 10K and above is acceptable, but 20K is that kind of sweet spot, anywhere from 20 and, you know, so in terms of that value, just because buying the data alone from like good providers, getting, let's just say, direct dial numbers or verified business emails and generating a really rock solid lead list, costs thousands of bucks just to get the information, not even to do the prospecting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we ended up with these people who are like, man, like I've got this a lot of activity going on, but I'm not like getting what I would love, which is tons of appointments. And, you know, internally I'm like, yeah, well, if you did this and this and this and this, you'd get them.
but that list is like extensive. 25 things long.
Yeah.
And by the time you're like halfway through it, people are like, I'm not doing that.
No, they aren't. And you know, so, you know, I frankly don't recommend those companies at this point. I don't recommend doing that. There's no quick fix answer. You know, you can't just put, you know, activate some widget. You definitely don't want to work with like a budget company. You know, we did our best to be like as high quality as we possibly could, to the point of like almost no margin, just for the sake of customer experience and customer service. And, but the other companies don't even care about that. They're profitable, great at getting people in, but making sure they're successful is a whole nother story. So I think it was more of like this internal conviction that like I just needed my clients to be so successful that they ranted and raved about how amazing their experience was and how many appointments they're getting. You know, if they're getting like, I mean, 10 plus appointments per week versus running just automation, quote unquote, for, you know, a couple months, and you don't get any results.
Yeah.
I just felt this like burning thing inside where I was like, okay, Nick is telling me I got to nix this. I got to upgrade. The market, I just feel, is changing. It's not enough to just do this one thing. And internally, we've been doing this other stuff anyways for our own self. Why aren't I doing this for my clients?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really interesting, because I know this has happened for you as well, Dean, but I feel like some of our best innovations that we've been able to sell out into the market are things that we were doing for us first. And we were like, oh, we have this need, you know, all the, you know, business operating system stuff and how to run your company. Like all of that was because I was growing my agency, not because I was thinking, oh man, wouldn't it be really cool to go out and sell this to people? Not at first anyway.
Yeah, right. I think that that's where a lot of the best ideas come from, I always find, because usually, I mean, I know a lot of people would love to love to say that what they're doing is 100% unique and proprietary to them. And I know that's the case with certain businesses. But for a lot of businesses, you know, a lot of the experiences you're having and the challenges you're facing are very similar across different businesses and industries. And I think if you genuinely identify something that you're actually struggling with, you know, that's a great starting point to say, well, hang on a minute. Is there other people struggling with this, right?
Right, right. And it's almost one of these things that the worse the struggle and the harder it is to find the solution, the better the opportunity to create something for other people will be.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Completely agree on that front, because as we started diving into solving this problem at, in a scalable way, we were, like my team and I, specifically my chief operating officer, who is also based in Denver, we were knocking our heads together trying to figure out how the heck do we really get something that is that we can guarantee a results for, because now we guarantee appointments on the calendar and we kind of pre-qualify people. We run all the ROI math ahead of time to make sure we're getting a very strong return, and we guarantee it if they're working with us now, because we can, because we know what's going to work and we know who we work with specifically and who it's going to work for. So, but we were trying to figure out this problem. And as we built and build and build, I, honest to God here, I wonder if anyone else has been able to figure some of this stuff out in the same way, because it is so complicated. I mean, we're talking, you know, we do a lot of stuff with Zapier. You guys mess around with the, that world much?
No, yeah. I have a whole automation team. Yeah.
Okay. So just to put this into perspective, because we lean very heavily on Zapier for our business, which, if you don't know and you're listening, is it's like this integration tool, and it helps you, you know, combine all this stuff.
It's like the crazy glue that holds all the cool apps on the internet together.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And so every prospect, so we prospect about 2,000 people per month, per client, per salesperson, really. And in that process, the zaps, so we have around 20 unique zaps that are necessary per client. And some of these zaps have tasks in them, like little actions that are above 50 tasks per zap. And that's per lead that comes in, that per prospect. So we've got 20 zaps with up to 50 tasks in each zap that get triggered per lead, just to get things working together in a weird hodgepodge of API webhook nonsense, mixed with actual human labor that also has to come in and like write for the first sentences for every email, and like respond to all the prospects and go back and forth, like 80 hours of prospect labor and all this other stuff. It's a like it's an insane problem to solve.
Well, and that's, you know, that you're actually bringing up something that I think is really interesting, and it's this concept that with the advance of all these web-based tools and things like Zapier and everything else, there is this new kind of this new model forming where it's a and it's something that I've been fascinated with for a long time, human computer interaction, right? It's like, what are the better things for people to do? What are the better things for, you know, software and tools to do? And then how do you merge them together in a seamless way to create a result? And sounds like you guys have really nailed it, you know, on that front. But to your point about, well, what's the problem? The problem is that most people aren't going to put 20 zaps together with 50 tasks and hope that it's the right stuff in the right order and they bring in the right people at the right time. And that's what I'm talking about when I say, like, you got to create a solution, right? Like, that's a solution. If you, you know, just said, hey, here's, you know, five zaps, go try it yourself, like, that's not a solution.
Yep. And that's also, I think, comes down to this other really point that we sort of live by, which is a quote I heard once, and I don't know who to attribute it to, but
It was probably Dean. Chances are really good.
I think it was Dean. It might have been Dean.
Yeah,
might
have I'll let you know for sure.
Or his dog or his horse, one of the three.
it's hard to tell who's getting credit.
Yeah, I'll just have to take a stab at it and say it might have been the horse. But
most likely.
The quote goes, take the long road. It's faster.
Right.
Take the long road. It's faster because I think we do live in this world where we want to take a lot of shortcuts. We want fast leads and we want lots of them. And we want to like the quick wins and we don't want to pay a dime to get it so often. Like we just,
still
what's
searching
the cheapest?
For that. 16 years, I'm still searching.
Right, exactly. Like, what's the cheapest possible minimum viable thing that we can do? And what ends up happening is, you know, someone might have it's why the low ticket businesses sometimes are so popular in, you know, even among, like, we had plenty of clients, I mean hundreds of clients on our low ticket offer, which is great, but it just frustrated me because, you know, I wanted them to be even more successful in many cases than they were. And, you know, we were doing our thing perfectly the way that it should have been done, but again, it's not enough for a lot of people. And so it was just so frustrating watching them like try to figure this stuff out. And it just like they came to us because they wanted something cheap and they wanted something fast. And if someone fails, that's why I don't like tripwires. If someone fails with your low cost offer, they're not going to upgrade. Like, you have to get them the result that they want pretty much no matter, I mean, as cheap as it can be, but without cutting corners, because someone will just go and they'll try some LinkedIn thing or they'll try the latest and greatest widget and it won't work. And then they'll write off an entire channel because they half-assed it and took the cheap road and they didn't do it right. But they think that if they did the right thing, it's not going to work because they did the not right thing, and now they're dismissing the right thing because of it. It's just this ass backwards kind of a way to do it.
You're so right about that. And entrepreneurs have this whole let's throw the baby out with the bathwater mentality in the first place. And so, yeah, it's like, you know, you talk to people and you're, oh my gosh, you know, you should really, you know, run this kind of ad on Facebook. Oh, I tried Facebook once. It doesn't work.
Yeah, Facebook doesn't work.
Facebook doesn't work. Or I tried online business. It doesn't work. So I'm going to stick with my brick and mortar. And you're like, wait a second.
Can we just replay that thing you just said?
you mean to tell me you exhausted all possibilities and it still didn't work? No. Like I know this guy and he's really good with an internet stuff and he tried it and. Yeah,
just, and he's it's his uncle, by the way.
Yeah, it's his uncle. Yeah. How much did you spend? Oh, I don't know, like $60, and we weren't seeing results. Oh, okay, cool. So yeah, you could stay back in the 19th century with Abraham Lincoln and everybody else.
Yeah, and I think there are ways. I mean, I was on a call with a prospect yesterday. I still occasionally take prospect calls, and you know, he was telling me about his journey into entrepreneurship and all this and what he's really looking to do. And we had to turn him down because actually in our case, we know because of the math, what is going to work and what is not going to work for our situation. And I think that when you can get that granular and you can know your return on investment, we always sell by ROI. So we run those numbers, so that it's so logically clear and the path is so clear. And if we don't think we can get them results, we're not going to sell them it. But, you know, in this case, this guy needed just a different kind of funnel. He needed something to, you know, generate these high volume deals without talking to people on the phone, which, again, that's a serious challenge. Like, for those who can solve that really well and predictably, it's amazing. But it's really hard to land that product market fit to where that can happen without a ton of marketing collateral. So you know, like just knowing what's going to work and for who. And if you can raise your ticket price, you can enter into this world of lead chasing and sales, but sales doesn't make sense if you're selling something worth $50.
Right. Well, what's the internet marketing phrase, Dean? I think it's either attributed to Dan Kennedy or somebody else. He who can pay the most for his customer wins.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's Dan Kennedy, right?
I think it was Dan Kennedy. I don't know. Everybody
says that Russell Brunson.
Well, but Russell studied with Dan.
Just kidding.
Yeah. I don't know. Russell does say it a lot.
He does. He does. Yep. And, you know, and I kind of used to be a part of some of that stuff as well. But I just, my journey sort of had to take me a different direction. Like I had to follow what worked in terms of, like actually moving the needle, and a lot of stuff we tried just didn't, you know, for one reason or another. And it wasn't, just like you pointed out though, it's like you have to do it the right way from the start. But we kind of figured out our sweet spot of really lowering that customer acquisition cost. Like just because you sell high ticket doesn't mean you have to have a ridiculously high customer acquisition cost.
Yeah, you know? that is absolutely true. It doesn't mean that. Yeah,
it just means you have to build a bit more intimacy. Usually, you have to be a bit more frequent. You have to be a bit more intimate or relevant or efficient, which is kind of that fire formula that we follow, that we put together a number of years back.
Well, and that's also why Dean had so many repeat customers when he was doing burlesque, because he built built that intimacy and that familiarity, and people just kept coming back for more.
Certainly more consistent.
Yeah.
Well, if I could just say the proof's in the pudding, isn't it, Dean?
it is, my friend. That it is.
I can't get out of my head now all these different things of like, oh, I tried business once. It doesn't work. Right? Like I tried eating healthy. It doesn't work.
To the gym doesn't work.
I worked out. I worked out once in 1996. It doesn't work. I'm out of shape now.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, and that's the level entrepreneurial. People
throw in the towel, like really without exploring things. And that, but that is the opportunity to actually do this stuff. You can't go to the gym for somebody, but there's a heck of a lot that you can do. And if you're trying to figure out how to create a high ticket program, it's like, okay, where are the things that people are trying and failing that you know how to do? And how can you bundle them up into a solution?
Yep. And not being lazy about it either. I think entrepreneurial laziness is a real thing, because, you know, the complexity does put your brain in a little bit of a knot and makes you want to sit on the couch and kind of roll over and wish you were dead from time to time.
But to that point, you don't have to be the one to figure it all out either. You know, there's we talked about, there's, you know, people who create automations and there's people who do this, right? Like we do that for clients, and you don't have to be the one who is going through all of that. You don't have to become an expert in everything. I think you need to be good at architecting things and having a vision for where you want to go, and recruiting the right help to be able to create that, and then testing it with the market, right? And not that that's, you know, necessarily trivial or easy, but you don't have to be a developer to do all of this stuff. And you don't have to take 5 years and go learn how to code or whatever. You know, it's like that's the long road to China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, putting together, you know, I think that perfect product market fit also can take a lot of time. You know, it's not something that people usually land on right away. Like I was on another podcast probably a year ago, where someone asked like if we had solved perfect product market fit. And at the time I was like, man, I can't say that we have. And lo and behold, we ended up completely transitioning our model, a year later. And so it just goes to show, like, you know, business is like, it's a fluid thing, and it's trial and error. But I wouldn't be afraid. Like, I think so many people starting out, they don't want to go to the enterprise, man. Like, stay away from the enterprise because the expectations are too high. There's too much checks and balances. There's too much bureaucracy and this back and forth and too many decision makers. But there is still a sweet spot, you know, of these businesses where the CEO is still kind of involved in the main decisions of the day. And if you can find, you can solve a huge problem for them, you can enter into this world of high ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's funny that you say that because I left my corporate job about 9 years ago. And, you know, then I was doing, I had an agency where we were, you know, doing digital strategy and analytics and consulting for big corporates. And that business just kind of fell apart for partnership reasons. And then I was like, you know what? I don't really want to work with these big guys anymore, but is there any money to be made in, you know, more startup entrepreneurial things? And it took a little while to figure it out, but there is, because there's so many people coming out online, starting their own companies, you know, that have a cool idea, that have traction in the market, but they need different solutions. And the solutions are non-existent in many cases, because there's like this big gap in the market. It's like, oh, not until you get to this level are you going to get the help you need. And I was kind of like, man, that sucks. Why can't we democratize good help earlier on to give these businesses a chance of becoming bigger and more substantial?
Absolutely. And I think there's this, a progression of what needs to happen in a business. Like, what you start with isn't going to be what you finish with. It was one of the lessons I had to learn in startup space, actually. Like, we had these redundant tasks where, you know, we had to build a solution that we knew was going to be removed and replaced with a better solution in a matter of months, but we still had to build the intermediary solution. And it blew my mind. I'm like, why are we investing all these resources doing it this way when we're just going to change it over there? And it's because we had to like grow things up progressively. And, you know, so I would say someone starting out, like your first big goal needs to be like hit that 100K. You know, get that 100K mark. You can do it yourself. You don't need much team. And then from there, you have now some capital to really reinvest, hopefully buy your time back. But, you know, the term was coined by another friend of mine once, called it the six-figure hamster wheel. Happens. You know, when you get there though, and you can't leverage yourself out, and all of a sudden you're the technician and the janitor and the CEO, and your life is now falling apart and you hate yourself because your business, and you basically worked yourself into a job. And so I think it is tough. Like, you know, a company just starting out is not going to necessarily be able to, you know, come work with someone like us and pay to scale their sales team. But there is that point where you're like, hey, I'm making money and I know I need to scale and I have to start removing these revenue generating activities and delegating them. And that's our sweet spot. Even if it's just a single person, you know, if their deal size, of course, is high enough.
Yeah. Right. Awesome. Dean, before we say goodbye to Tyler, what words of wisdom do you have?
Well, very few, as per
my. That's what I suspected. Okay, now we're good to go.
No, I think this is a great subject. At least, you know, for people listening in all different situations in business, this should at least be something for them to start thinking about if they haven't yet. You know, so I think it's a great subject that we've started unpacking. So appreciate you coming on, Tyler, and talking about it.
Absolutely, and you know, I think when you're listening to a podcast, there's always that. Like there's motivation and you can get some info, but there's so much depth that, you know, we're never able to fully dive into. I think the nitty gritty tactics, because we can talk about some high level strategy, but going deep into like what needs to happen first and what needs to happen second and third, you know, and so I guess I would just want to make sure that the audience knows, like, this podcast is a resource for that information, and it doesn't have to end with just listening. You know, like, they can dive in and take things one step further. They should be putting an action plan together, you know, like, take action on what we're talking about, and don't just get the offer. Figure out how you can grow that offer, how you can scale that offer profitably. That'd be my parting thoughts.
Yeah, and be open to a little bit of trial and error, right? Yes. You know, if we're kind of identifying a very high level 3-step process: one, create an offer; two, you know, refine that and then get a market match to that, and then go and figure out if you can sell it and scale it. Like, that's, you know, effectively what you need to do. Is it simple? Yes. Is it easy? No. But the rewards are substantial if you can figure that out. And so don't be one of these people who's like, oh, I tried selling that, it doesn't work.
You did try it once for 10 minutes and it didn't work, in which case there's probably no point ever doing it again.
No, very, very fair point. I mean, if you put in, you know, 30 seconds of thought and you had an idea and then it didn't pan out, then obviously it's not meant to be. But
it's kind of like saying, you know, I'll ask people if they've done outbound email, and they're like, oh, yeah, I've done that. And when I dig a little bit, they're like, oh, yeah, I had MailChimp account. And yeah. I'm like, okay.
Well, I had a MailChimp account, and I sent 2 broadcasts to a list of 4 people, 2 of whom were my parents.
Right. And you know, and sending newsletters obviously is one thing, and sending like stuff you don't opt in for is a whole nother ballgame. Now you're talking about, how do I navigate canned spam? How do I stay out of the spam box?
I spammed people once. It didn't work.
Right. You know, so, you know, the answers are out there, right? And it's just, it is possible to flood calendars with appointments, but some people can't do it if their life depended on it. And so, you know, that's where hopefully, you know, they can lean in a little bit and learn what they need to learn.
Well, for those people who are listening and you do have a high ticket offer and you want to check out what Tyler and his team are up to, is leadroll.co the best place for them to check that out?
Yeah, absolutely. They can go to leadroll.co. They can find me on LinkedIn, even Tyler Kemp. I help with growth. You'll see on my profile.
I feel like Tyler almost forgot his last name, Dean.
I almost did. Well, I was thinking in my mind, I was like, do I want to give the exact LinkedIn URL? Because that's how granular I could give, like linkedin.com/in/TJ Kemp.
I tried that once. It doesn't work.
Yeah. So Tyler Kemp, search it. We have blueprints we give away for free. So we can give a step-by-step roadmap, something we consider to be just the bulletproof process for outbound
That's
prospecting,
awesome.
Show them how to stay out of the spam box, show them all the stuff for free, run the ROI math with them on the phone, no commitments of any kind. And only if it makes total sense will we ever even ask someone to work with us. So, yeah, that's the best place. Take a quiz, get on a call with me or my team, and that's how they can start working with us and, you know, scale to kind of either their first million, or scale to 5 million, or scale to 10 million plus in annual recurring revenues. Kind of our sweet spot.
Awesome. Well, and Dean, maybe Tyler's blueprint that he's talking about could be included in the new gift we're about to unveil to our audience soon.
Ooh, look at you just dropping crumbs around the place.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're up to something cool here, Tyler. We'll let you know offline, and the audience will know as soon as it's ready.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So, Dean and I are going to carry on for a few more minutes, Tyler, but we'll let you go. We appreciate your time. Thank you for being here. That was an awesome convo. For
Much
those of you guys who want to check out Tyler and what he's up to, go to leadroll.co or find him at LinkedIn. Unless you tried LinkedIn once and you don't, and it didn't work for you, then by all means, don't do that.
In that case, just skip it.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for being here, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Tyler.
Yeah. So, Dean, I feel like we need to move forward with the show. But the most important thing for me right now is your horse still eating?
Like, why
I know you
the
put
horse
the feed bag.
Eat?
Well, I don't know. I just wanted to check because I was a little bit concerned whether or not his feed bag was still secure, intact, and everything was working out fine.
Anybody that's in close proximity to me does not struggle with food, my friend. You should know well if I know.
Yes, I do know well. I don't know if we've ever talked about the, like, I don't know, was it 48, 46 ounces? How big was that steak that you ate after Funnel Hacking Live a couple years ago? Dean actually has his name on a website. I'm not even kidding. We should put the link. This is what we got to do. We got to put the link to your plaque, your online plaque, in the show notes for everybody to see, because it's Shula's Steakhouse in Orlando, Florida. You had like an appetizer, a salad, a 48 ounce steak, a side,
two sides,
and dessert.
Yes. Yes.
Am I right?
You are right. You are right. Yeah. Yeah. And funny enough, I'm guessing you guys have it in the US because it's an American show, but there's that Man vs. Food TV show, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
About 2 months ago, he went to Shula's Steakhouse to eat the steak.
And he didn't do it.
And he only just did it, but he only ate the steak.
I'm
like, where's the appetizers and the sides?
That's not right, man. You put that guy to shame. It should be Dean versus Food.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, but no, that was a good conversation on a good topic. And I know I'm sure we'll probably talk about that many, many times in future, because it is something that we both are actively involved in.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, you know, that it's such a good conversation, because for a lot of people, the idea of making that leap to I can sell something high ticket is at best makes them afraid. At worst, it paralyzes them into not doing anything.
Well, absolutely. And I tell you one thing I've observed over time, and I won't say this is everybody, but a lot of times if I see an entrepreneur business owner that has a real challenge in trying to come to terms with offering high ticket products, you tend to see a lot of times that they also have a problem buying high ticket products. Like there, I've noticed a connection between the two. Like if you don't see value yourself in a high level, high end trainer, program, product, opportunity, service, then chances are you're going to have a hard time figuring out how you can do it yourself. Because if you won't do that for you, you're always going to, even if subconsciously, impart that belief onto your prospects and customers as well. What do you think about that?
Oh man, I think you're right on with that. And it's almost one of these things like what you can't or won't do for yourself, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to do for other people.
Right. Yes. Great.
And so, yeah, I know, you know, I mean, I think the sort of caliber and quality of people that I talk to, you know, over the last several years has just continuously improved. But I know that there are plenty of people out there who, you know, they won't even invest in a $47 thing.
Right.
Right. They're still stuck. Oh my God. Like I wouldn't pay for that. You know? Okay. Well, why?
Right.
I tried that once. It didn't work.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It's tough. There is definitely quite a lot of mental barriers that we put up in these areas. But yeah, you know what, just on this subject, I'm just thinking like of the various times where I've had these challenges myself. And you know, one of the greatest things that helps me today, and you know what, this has only come, I would say I've only had this level of what I'm about to talk about only in the last couple of years. So this isn't like a 15 year long thing that I've always had this. And that is,
hold on. I got to do an announce for this.
Oh, go, please do.
Okay. With his biggest revelation. Okay, now you can go.
I feel like we need that at least once every show. But and now I've forgotten what I was going to say. What was I going to say?
Your biggest revelation. Oh, don't no, let me down. I just didn't announce for you.
Here we go. We've got the announcement. So one of the biggest things that's helped me in not only making high ticket offers, but successfully doing so, is to have such unwavering belief in what you do and the solution you provide that it is your, it almost shifts things around to be like, my customers need this thing. Like you have to have this thing. I have to do everything in my power to get this into the hands of people. And I tell you how I've reinforced that. Like I genuinely believe, and to be clear, as I'm sure others that probably you would deem as competitors to me would believe, I genuinely believe that for what we offer and for who we offer it to as our audience, there isn't a single person on this planet that does what we do as well as we do it.
Right.
Now, when you can say that and look in the mirror and not just say it and hope it comes true, but I mean actually believe it. Like, there is no lengths that you won't then go to think, well, it's my duty to get this into my hands of my customers, and I'm going to spend as much time as necessary, get whatever help necessary to make sure that I do that successfully. Because if I fail that, then I'm just letting everybody down.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about this whole topic of, you know, there's another transition that I think you make, you know, depending on, you know, where you are in your life cycle as an entrepreneur. But you realize that most people start a business. I'd say most people, there's exceptions to this. Most people start a business, say, all right, like, what can I create so that I can get more or have more for me?
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then you realize that that's not really the key to growth. And it's also not really the key to fulfillment, if we're honest. Sure. And then you start saying, oh, wait a second, what can I create to help others? And then when you have that conviction, like you're talking about, where you so fully believe in your product or your service or whatever it is, then it's not about, oh, well, how can I, you know, grow my business just so I can, you know, have a better bottom line or more money in my bank account. All those things are sort of more rewards for putting the emphasis on how can I make sure that the people that I'm here to serve get this solution so that they can excel in whatever endeavor is important to them.
Yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I think it was Jay Abraham who talked about this fiduciary's responsibility and thing like that. You know, I mean, it's a big topic, but that you really hit the nail on the head with that. And it's so sort of counterintuitive at the beginning, I think, but it really is the key to growth, because your business is not about you at all.
Ooh, you're going to drop wisdom like that so late on in the show.
So late. Well, I feel like we had a few more minutes. It was just like, it needed to happen.
Well, you need to warn the rest of us.
Like, do an announce.
Wisdom is about to be shared.
Yeah, that's
amazing. We should have a wisdom alarm. Here it comes again. Wisdom dropping by the show.
What if we do an announce in reverse? Wisdom was just shared on the show. and there's no like sort of policing of that. It's just whatever we determine to be wisdom.
Right. Definitely. Right.
But I
will say that time the audio of the sound surpassed the audio level of your voice.
Right. Well, that's not unusual.
Like.
Yeah. So here's another question around this whole topic of the high ticket thing. I think a lot of people are confused where to start with like the price, right? Like you said, you know, when we were talking with Tyler, you know, you had, you know, products that were like, you know, $70 or $90 or whatever. And I think that first time that you have a high ticket thing, it can be kind of freaky.
Oh gosh. Kind of.
Right?
Yes.
Like, wait a second, I'm going to ask for 1,000 or 2,000 or five or whatever. And I would just say to, you know, people who are considering, you know, creating a high ticket offer and everything, your starting point doesn't have to be your ending point.
Oh, not at all. I'm so glad you, we probably need another hour, so we maybe have to carry this on another time. But I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was one of my biggest problems early on. Because I think a lot of times the thing is the mentors or the people that you're turning to that are probably telling you, you should have high ticket, raise your prices. They're probably further down that path than you are. And to them, yeah. High ticket, you know, I could probably have a conversation with you, James, and you would tell me that what I sell as, in air quotes, high ticket is really cheap. You know, because your level of high ticket for the customer base you have is 10x the prices that I'm selling at, you know? And so I think one of the best paths that I always went, and it's exactly with what you've just said, is my first, what I would deem at that time as a high ticket program, was under $1,000.
Right.
But that exact same program, yes, of course, it got better. I got better. So did the program. As the first group of people coming through, or the first customers coming through, you get feedback.
You know, so you can start lower and then improve as you go. And what I can tell you is within, I think, a matter of, I would say, about 12 to 18 months, what started as a 997 program became a $5,000 program. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, it did evolve. I didn't just change the price, but it, by all accounts, it was the same program.
Well, and I think the important thing here is that the more completely you can solve a problem and the more comprehensive the solution,
yes,
the more you can charge for that. But at the beginning, you don't necessarily know. So I think Doug is about to kick us off the air.
Oh, classic Doug move.
I know. It is a classic Doug move. Next time we're going to bring him on and we're going to have words about why he kicked us off while we're in the middle of all this great wisdom. But in the meantime, for those of you guys who want to check out back episodes on the show, see what we're up to, go to justatipsshow.com. And if you want to call us, talk to us live on the show, make sure you do. We're live every Tuesday at 1 o'clock Eastern. Call us at 888-627-6008. This is James P. Friel signing off with my esteemed British co-host, Mr. Dean Holland, on another episode of Just the Tips. We'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for tuning in to Just the Tips, where we believe business should be profitable and fun. For show notes, links, and other information on our guests, visit justthetipsshow.com. For more information on how to connect with Dean Holland, visit deanholland.com. And if you'd like to go from being a hustling entrepreneur to an effective CEO capable of running your company without being stuck in the day-to-day, visit me for free training and resources at jamespfriel.com. Our theme music is Happy Happy Game Show by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.